Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9, coming to you from MVP Summit 2015, here with the awesome Michelle LaRue Bustamante. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Fantastic. You viewers don't know this, but we're going to do something fun.
Okay.
¿Qué me cuentas?
Oh, ¿en qué cosa vamos a hablar?
De lo que quieras, cualquier tecnología que te guste, cualquier cosa que estás interesada, podemos hablar de cualquier cosa.
Estoy muy interesada en seguridad.
¿Seguridad?
En los nubes.
¿Nubes?
Y en containers.
Containers.
No sé la palabra para containers.
I bet you didn't know she was good at Spanish. Wasn't that fantastic? I thought I was like in Mexico or something.
That's about where it stops, though.
Okay. So tell us about what, we'll say that again.
Yeah.
What technology are you working on currently?
Okay.
And what's some of the stuff that you're excited about for the future?
So I do a lot of migration to cloud.
Okay.
Primarily in Azure, although we have partners that do other platforms too. So it's kind of fun to see the comparative. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of security consulting.
Okay.
And it's interesting because that has evolved into sort of a new space for me. It's more around the C-level, not only identity implementations and sort of the IT pro side that I bring other people to do,
sure.
but also just how do I help, you know, CIOs and CXOs and CSOs plan the roadmap for securing their environments. So that's a fun topic because there's a lot to do, especially when you think cloud.
Sure.
And then containers all the way and microservices, of course.
So let's go in order because I think they kind of build on each other in a fun way.
That's
so
true.
Most people have this notion, and maybe it's wrong, you can correct me. I have my app, I can just put it in the cloud and everything's good. That's not quite the way it is, is it?
It can be, depending how you built your app, but I think that the reality is, if you're not in a cloud vendor, you're still somewhere that is cloudy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you still need public-facing endpoints, you still need servers, you still need to manage all of that. Mm-hmm. If you're not using a PaaS environment like Microsoft offers, then you're still doing the same work you would have in a colo facility. I've done that back in the 2001 era.
Yeah, that was
And
fun.
It was a lot of fun trying to find machines that you could replace, and how long is that vendor agreement for, and you pay money for that, right?
Yeah.
And of course, we don't deal with that in the cloud because the machines are there, and you just don't see them. So, yeah.
I think we forget the actual pain involved with managing your personal cloud back in the early thousands.
Unbelievable.
Tell us some of like the stuff you had to do on a day in, day out basis that sort of this PaaS or cloud offering sort of takes away.
Well, so a good example would be literally how do you replace a machine in your colo facility?
You literally have
How fast can you get another machine to put on the rack when something goes wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And you had to pay vendors a fee to have a turnaround time to get the machine to replace your boxes. And of course, back in the day, we didn't really scale out very far horizontally. So, you know, you were buying huge machines vertically so that you could scale and prove to your customers that you could handle the load that they never brought you, but they said they were going to bring you, you know. And so it was really expensive, actually. Like, really, literally, probably $750,000 investment just to get everything up and running in the colo facility and the management around that, but mostly just for the software agreements and also the hardware.
And it feels like with the cloud, it's removing sort of that cost prohibitiveness so that any entrepreneur with a really good idea that wants X can do it.
Anyone.
That's fantastic.
So, which is awesome. Yeah.
So moving now to the next topic, which is interesting. Once we start to put stuff in sort of this public space like the cloud, security is starting to become, it's always been an issue, but people just start like, oh, wow, maybe I should look at security. What do you say about that?
So I think this is an awesome topic for so many reasons, but let me start with, is the cloud really less secure? Of course not.
No, it's
How can it possibly be less secure when you're looking at vendors like Microsoft that have all of these compliance standards around their actual colo facilities and the deployments? So the interesting thing that happens is when I go through these questionnaires that customers get, that are from their customers saying, do you do check, down the list, right?
Sure.
So examples could be anything from how do you manage your passwords, which is more of an identity service thing, to, you know, do you have, you know, 27001 compliance ISO in your, you know, colo facility, right? So the answer is I can check probably a good number of boxes just by the fact that I'm hosted in a cloud environment that is managed by a vendor that has all of those certifications. And, you know, there's sort of like a fine line there, right? Of course, there are things I have to do. If I'm managing credit cards, I still need to do PCI compliance with my software.
Sure.
If I want a SOC type 1, type 2, compliance certification, then I still need to do certain things like monitor my security logs every single day, you know, and go through the process of that compliance for my software and my company. But I can still check the box for these general questionnaires that can get me in the door to winning a customer.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, as you go through that, you start seeing, ooh, we better do something about this and this and this. Okay, let's get that on the list and start sprinting. And that's a good, you know, awakening for some customers.
That's
too.
Awesome. You mentioned, like, ISO, was it 9001?
27001
and
is an
SOX,
example.
Which is Sarbanes-Oxley. These are government requirements of how things need to be run.
They can be, yeah.
And also, if you're doing
And then we have FSMA, right? And we have FERPA for education. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's a really long list, right? And Microsoft has a large number of them already covered. And I think they're ahead of the curve on a few, although I can't remember which one.
So just by virtue of moving to the cloud, you can be assured that your infrastructure is going to be compliant with whatever government entity you need to be compliant with.
We used to have to write in our service level agreements, because I did this in the pre-cloud days, like, how do we protect and access the colo facility? And we had to write things like, oh, there's a handprint reader to get into the physical area. I don't have to talk about that anymore, because now it's, well, that's Azure's job, right?
Yeah.
And so I can kind of move on to just the software aspects. And there are plenty of software aspects, but, you know.
So let's move on to, because, I mean, obviously you can have all this great infrastructure that's really well protected, but we can do bonehead sort of software moves as developers. What are some of the things that you're finding that people are doing? And obviously you have the OWASP Top 10.
Right.
Which is a really good starting point. What are you seeing the gaps that we can sort of just, look, you can just fill this one really easy.
There's a lot. I think, you know, if you're talking about the identity space, so I spend a lot of time in that area, and usually I focus on, when I build software, using an identity provider, so like Azure AD, and there's a number of other providers we could use. But by just the fact that you use a identity service, you can get a whole number of things for free, like the registration sign-up process and how emails are sent, and not including, you know, the password, initial passwords having a certain strength and entropy, making sure that the password strength is enforced and you not having to figure out how to write that code.
Yeah.
So the list, there's a really long list just around that user management story that you would get for free by going into an identity provider, as long as you use them for what they do best. And I think that's huge, right? So, and they can also be sort of a defense measure for denial of service attacks.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're going to be redirected there first. Mm-hmm. And if you have an identity provider, then that sort of pushes over there to those servers, you know, the initial attack, if you will. And that can also be a gate for, hey, these IP addresses, you're coming from a different location, we need multi-factor auth now.
Yeah.
And all that stuff, again, coming for free out of the box with most identity providers.
And that's really nice, because, I mean, writing that stuff is tedious, but we all need it.
And it's not just tedious. Do you know the right way to do it?
Yeah.
I mean, even I have to go and refresh my memory when I've written that type of code. I mean, you know, having built things like that in the past. And it's just, you have to go look it up again and say, oh, but what are the new threats? And you have to threat model everything. So there's the next topic, right? Which is, you know, one of the things I've been spending a lot of time on, which I think is a lot of fun too, is teaching teams how to threat model every new feature they build. Because at the end of the day, your software is, you know, you have your API tiers that you're calling, you're using tokens, or in some cases they're not yet.
Yeah.
But you just have to look at what are the paths that this could be attacked. And if you just take new features, forget about going through your old system, your entire system. You need to do that too.
Of course.
To go review and make sure that you're protected. But at the end of the day, if you go through new sprints and say, okay, guys, now there's a security set of TFS entries associated with this sprint, and somebody's going to be the person in charge of making sure we deliver that, and then you get this checklist now in your TFS that is interesting. It's like the history of, yes, we cared about security. So now when a customer says, you know, do you have a secure development lifecycle or whatnot, you can, you know, you don't necessarily have to have this really verbose document around SDLC.
Sure.
It's nice if you can do that, but people don't have time.
No.
So do it in an agile way, and now you've got a checklist, and you go back to your security area in your TFS list or wherever it is you track your tasks, and you can say, yeah, every single feature, this is what we do. And it's a way of proofing, it's audit trail.
Sure.
It's really important stuff, and it helps the team get involved and realize, oh yeah, we got to think about that every single time.
So what you're saying is, as you're developing new features, and let's forget about the fact that maybe you haven't been doing this and you feel guilty and, you know, it keeps you up at night.
Right.
Anytime you do a new sprint, before you start the sprint, have a sort of a list of security checkpoints or checklists of things you can check off after the feature's done.
And around those features specifically.
Got
so
it.
Somebody who's designing the feature, it should be considered the security aspects in the feature.
I see.
And if you do that right away, then you're all set.
Interesting. So yeah. you mentioned having someone else manage sort of identity. You mentioned sort of in your software development lifecycle having this sort of security mindedness.
Yeah.
Any other suggestions you have for security?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a really long list, but I think some of the things we see people do, like you need some sort of data from production that you can reproduce problems outside of a production. And now we've got this production data that we shouldn't be having anywhere else.
Yeah.
And masking is an interesting band-aid on that, because if you can leave it in Azure and then use, you know, masking and have
sure.
a replica and at least lock down any PII, then at least it's a starting point. But the real fact is most people are required to not actually have that content anywhere else.
Yeah.
And so you need to do things like masking before you get there. So then you look at tools that will mask along to make your copy to have a heuristically accurate set of data that you can actually do work with, right? And it's usually because you want to repro something of a problem, so you
right.
want the same bugs in prod to come over to test to repro the problem, but you don't want to have access to the data. So it is an interesting challenge, and I see that it's probably not the number one thing on people's mind, and
right.
yet it is probably one of the number one things you're not supposed to do.
I mean, just think about the liability implications of...
Huge.
Like, and you might even do this without even knowing, but you're working on this medical application, and you're like, oh man, this guy's having a bug, and so let me download his data, and you
right.
find out some things about his health. I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, you've totally violated a couple of laws.
Right.
There's some issues around your software now that is protection, and you can bring like a lawsuit down and
right.
bring it completely out.
But that's why it's nice to have the masking capability right. also, just as it's an easy sort of low footprint to solve a problem where, okay, let me hit prod, but I don't have rights, so I'm not gonna see anything. So I think that I call it a band-aid because it's not really solving the problem
sure.
of heuristically accurate data, but it does solve the problem of I can't see it right now, and that's huge. And
yeah.
I love that we have that in Azure.
SQL Azure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's move on to the next part.
Yeah.
And this is a very young sort of phase of this particular technology, containers.
Mm.
So why are containers so exciting for you?
Well, so I think that, you know, I was actually just talking with somebody and I was using the evil word SOA
uh-huh.
because it's so incredibly funny. If you look at the way people talk about containers, we
it's
are
like, it's,
talking
it's
again about all the things we yeah. talked about in the mid-2000s, which is, you know, interfaces, security isolation, fault
We've
isolation.
Come back full circle.
Right? And the concept of versioning boundaries, the concept of ownership of the data all the way vertically.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all concepts that we wish for. Because why? Because we want isolated development teams to be able to take a chunk of functionality and focus on it and have that one thing be updatable without anybody else needing to care, as long as they go through the interface and the interface doesn't change.
Sure.
So we're kind of back there, and I remember somebody commenting on my Twitter feed, like, don't ever use SOA, right, as a word, but the truth is it's true, it's not SOA at all, right, because we're doing it in a new way, which is more fine-tuned, you know, artifacts for deployment that actually can potentially perform well on the same VM, because now you can have containers connected to each other on the same VM without the latency of hitting another VM,
right.
without the latency of the HTTP hop necessarily.
And but the vertical boundary
that
you
want. But you've got the vertical boundary that you want, and so now you can really have these objects that you deploy that actually are their own unit and that you can isolate across development teams and so on. So I find that it's fun and fascinating that
mm-hmm.
it's actually repeating what we wished for all along, but just doing it better, right?
So my challenge with that, and maybe you can help me with that, is I've always had a hard time knowing where to separate the boundary vertically.
Right.
Like, I have a hard time specifically with that.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it's hard to talk in generalities about that, but do you
right.
have any suggestions for how to maybe start thinking about maybe this should be a separate service?
Well, it's usually feature boundaries, right? Feature boundaries are a good way to look at it. And obviously an app that has UI has many moving parts and features underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So you could look at concretely, this looks like a feature, you know, reports of this nature and that nature. And then maybe over here we've got, you know, user management. And then over here we've got permissions management. And I'm talking security things because I think about that. Yep. But then you've got inside there, you know, whatever the feature of the app is, e-commerce this or, you know, I don't know, image management that or, you know. And so that's one way to look at it, I guess. When you start looking at Service Fabric, I guess it goes more down to the granular actor level. So now you're talking about, somebody gave me a good analogy, rows. Think of it like these are rows. These are actually, like, it's you and me. We're an object underneath user management. And now that could be stateful or not. So so that's sort of another layer below contain, you know, more fine-grained than containers themselves, right? So, but it is a design paradigm shift. The other thing I'm hearing a lot of is that, you know, your actual container can also own its own UI. And so now you think about moving these things around where they know how to send you the way to represent it, sort of like REST.
Interesting.
You know, but you can either ignore presenting it that way or not, I suppose.
Or take the suggestion.
But the idea is you could theoretically now distribute even the UI presentation and have it sort of plug in.
And the thing about that is immediately my brain's like, but that's gonna take more time because these things are on different machines. And I'm like, wait a minute, no, they're containers on the same machine.
Which they should, could be.
Which makes it, well, they could be. It just depends on how they're set up.
And you need an assembler for that, right? Yeah. It's like there's got to be some sort of, you know, website or something that pulls together all those moving parts and assembles them. So, again, there's design involved. There's no question. So I think when you start looking at containers, it's easier to think about the back end first and then maybe evolve ourselves towards the front end. And
I see.
Would I do my website in all in containers? Maybe, maybe not. I could.
Yeah.
But if that's too much of a stretch and I really want to just focus on the back end scaling, then I could start there.
So my question for about containers is this also. How early are we in the container sort of era?
Yeah.
Is it still early? Should I start diving into it? Is there stuff in production now? What is your sense of these
things? So the Docker space has been around already much longer than some of the new evolutions, right? So I would say right now there's a lot of adoption in Docker and there are people going to production and yet it's still early.
Yeah.
It's early, but people are doing it because they love it, they want it, they need it, whatever that is. And then they're looking at different cloud platforms and sort of how are we evolving with the tools to manage it. So this is an interesting problem. So you're going to have your plumbers that just like to manage things, right? And they want control and they're going to throw teams at it and they're going to build expertise around it. But now you're dealing with things like, okay, so in the Docker space, I've got these different choices for, you know, leader election tools and management of clusters and so on. And some of them work better than others. So which one should I choose? And how do I deal with node flapping? And how do I deal with all of these things that come up that I now need expertise on from a management side? So then when you lift up a level and look at like what Mesosphere is doing with the data center operating system, DCOS, right? So that is, you know, a tight relationship with Microsoft, and so then that becomes another layer of, okay, so now I have somebody managing my fabric and deploying all my things and showing me visually, and then you've got Service Fabric, which would be yet another layer of health, recovery, distribution, management that might make it even easier, right? And so with that one, it's still early, but it's already starting to surface, you know, I guess early views of portals and management tools. So so you got to ask your team, I guess, you know, where do you want to be? There are people that love the plumbing, and I think Docker's awesome, and I think there's a lot of great tools around it. So you can party with that, and you can use, you know, some of the tools from Mesosphere too that, that aren't necessarily the management layer.
Right.
So, yeah.
It just feels like...
It's early.
You know what? I think this is an apt statement. Distributed systems are hard.
Yeah.
They should make a t-shirt out
remember,
of it.
Remember when you built one big thing?
Yeah.
It was like you hit the button to compile and you came back 3 hours later after lunch and that was when it was done.
Yeah.
And now from the beginning, you're thinking of,
this
I need
thing,
to understand how these
everywhere.
Things move and operate. So,
well, this is awesome. Thanks so much. Where can people go to find out more about you and what you do? You give lots of talks, lots of cool stuff.
Sure. You can go to, well, at Michelle Busta on Twitter and michellebusta.com. where I try to blog, and Soliance.net, of course, where our company lives and does all the things we do with many great partners.
Well, awesome. Thanks for laying the knowledge on me. You're so awesome. We are here at MVP Summit, MVP Summit 2015. I'm here with Michelle Bustamante. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. Take care.